He sang the song hundreds of times in concerts. Then he decided he had to make a hard choice between his work and his family.
I wrote this song with a sincere heart, but I am not living the way I want to live or the way God's calling me to be there for my family as the leader. I realized, like, am I just going to sing this song or am I actually going to live it?
Welcome to Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Five Love Languages. Today, Grammy-nominated singer and former frontman for the group Sanctus Real challenges men to lead their families well. Matt Hammett joins us to talk about finding courage to fight for your marriage, your children, and your faith.
It's going to be a powerful conversation because Matt is honest and authentic about the struggle that I think many men feel today. And we've chosen his book as our featured resource because this is Father's Day weekend, and this is the heart cry of a lot of dads out there, I think. I think you'll be encouraged. If you go to fivelovelanguages.com, you'll find Matt's book titled Lead Me. Just go to fivelovelanguages.com. Gary, you did more traveling after your children were grown, but did you ever feel the struggle between ministry and family?
You know, Chris, I think to a certain degree, all husbands feel the struggle. And maybe most wives also feel the struggle of how do we balance, you know, career and family. But you're right. I didn't do a whole lot of traveling at all when our children were at home. I was on a church staff and doing counseling and encountering families where they were struggling with this very issue. So I kind of took that to heart, you know, and while the kids were at home, I was home most of the time. And my traveling started after that. But yeah, I think it's a common struggle. And I'm excited today to be talking to Matt about this topic and about this new book.
His name is Matt Hammett, a singer, songwriter, author, speaker. He was the lead singer for the band Sanctus Real from 1996 to 2016. That's a lot of years. He's won 3 Dove Awards, was nominated for 2 Grammys. He's part of the family life team at marriage and men's conferences. His book is Lead Me, Finding Courage to Fight for Your Marriage, Children, and Faith. You can find out more at fivelovelanguages.com.
Well, Matt, welcome to Building Relationships.
It's good to be here, Gary. Thanks for having me.
So you put your finger on an exposed nerve in a lot of men these days who are really trying to figure out this whole thing of work and family and how do we balance those two. What kind of response have you received from your book thus far?
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like the response to the book so far has been similar to the song Lead Me. You know, men are really still struggling to lead their families and always feeling that tension. Am I doing enough? How do I do more? And then also, you know, I'm kind of hearing that same echo since the book release from wives just saying, oh man, the things in this book, you know, that your wife has said to you, that is your heart's cry. That's what we want. We are still hungry for our husbands to lead us more than just financially, but emotionally and spiritually as well.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think that an awful lot of wives identify with this struggle. Give us an overview of your life. What did you want to do when you were young, and what were your goals? Just give us an overview of all of that.
Yeah, so I grew up in church, and my parents, I was very fortunate because my parents weren't people who just took us to church 3 times a week at home. They really lived and modeled for us what it meant to follow Christ, and so I see that honestly as one of the greatest gifts in my life, that legacy. And so from a very young age, I just always knew that I wanted to serve the Lord. That doesn't mean I didn't have struggles like everybody else, of course, but I did. I always kind of had this heart that I wanted to use whatever dreams God was putting in my heart to impact people and impact culture. So, you know, when music came along, it's like I kind of knew right away that that's what I wanted to do with it.
So how did you get involved in music and how early did you get involved in music?
Yeah, so my youth pastor at Calvary Assembly of God in Toledo, the church I grew up at my whole life, Toledo, Ohio, my hometown, you know, he just kind of started giving me these opportunities. He saw my desire to just use my gifts. And even as I remember first coming into, you know, the youth group as an 8th grader, already he was trying to give me an opportunity to serve. And by the time I was 15, he put me on stage to lead worship. And around that same time, as I went into my sophomore year of high school, at a private Christian school in Toledo, I met a guy named Chris Roman, who was just kind of this, I did not look like a rock star at all. This guy looked like a natural born rock star. And I remember he was sitting up on the table in the cafeteria, and he was playing Wildflowers from Tom Petty, and he was learning it for a girl. And I remember thinking, like, this dude is way too cool for me. But we struck up a friendship, started playing together at the chapel band, and then started getting together on the weekends, and met a guy in a different band named Mark Grohman. And so me, Mark, and Chris, over the course of that year in 1996, started the band Sanctus Real. And we had no idea, you know, what it would lead to. Actually, I would tell you this. We would have picked a much easier name to say and to you know, look on a paper. People always wonder how to pronounce it. We would have picked a much different name if we knew it was going to last 20 years.
Now, let's talk about your wife a bit. How did you meet Sarah?
When we were still an independent band in 1999, we were just getting out of high school. We were already having offers from record labels and getting to know some folks in Nashville. So we were getting these opportunities to play at some of these festivals kind of earlier in the day. And I remember being at this festival in Columbus, Ohio, Third Day and Audio Adrenaline and all these bands we had loved were playing, and we had played earlier in the day, and that night, and while Third Day was playing, I remember just kind of the lights washing over the crowd, and I saw this girl kind of at the back of the crowd on the fringes, she was wearing overalls, and she was barefoot, and she was just dancing and laughing, and I remember seeing her thinking, like, man, I need more of that in my life. I'm like kind of this uptight people pleaser guy, and I'm looking at this totally like carefree person, you know? And that night I wanted to say something. I didn't say anything, but crazy enough, the next morning, 3 hours north, we led a worship set for a community-wide church service, and her grandmother's church and her mother's church were involved in it, and she had driven back up to Toledo from Columbus just like we did the night before and was there at the event, and I saw her again, and I thought, all right, I'm not going to let this pass. So that was in 1999 when we first met, and immediately knew we had something special.
Wow. Providential.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, did she realize what she was signing up for, this on-the-road lifestyle?
Well, you know, when we were young, at that time, we were just a local band. So we didn't have our record deal yet. We were playing kind of local shows, but we still had somewhat of a normal life. You know, we were working jobs and trying to make ends meet that way, unsure of what would happen with the band. But in 2001, I mean, everything changed, because not only did we get married in 2001, but then in the fall of 2001, right after our wedding, we went on the road as a signed band, you know, with a real record for the very first time on a real tour. And I don't think either one of us were really prepared for the challenges of road life.
Yeah. Well, I can only imagine. Now, I understand that really right after your honeymoon, you jumped in a van with the band and took off.
Yeah.
How'd that go with her?
Yeah, so that's, you know, when I talk about the real challenges of road life, I mean, that's where it really got nitty-gritty, you know? It was one of those experiences where I think both of us were having the time of our lives on one hand. So, you know, in one way, we're like, we're seeing Mount Rushmore, we're walking the streets of Boston, we're out in California for the first time, seeing the Redwoods, and all these amazing things that we, you know, we were so in awe of these experiences. So there were these highs that were very romantic and very fun. But at the same time, you know, in between those experiences, we're stuck in a van with four other guys. We're sleeping in the van a lot of times because we're totally broke and we're having to drive to the next show to make it to the next city overnight sometimes. And then, you know, also there's no space for us. We're either at a church performing or at a festival performing Or, you know, we're in the van driving to the next place. There's no room or space for us to fight when we need to or have serious conversations. And there was certainly no space for us to have the freedom to learn, you know, how to be intimate with each other in this new marriage. So you can imagine we felt there. It was like a pressure cooker at times, and all that stuff would stew. And sometimes when the moment, came upon us, that pressure would come out, right? I mean, that would be, it would lead to conflict. That was very difficult for us, especially in those early years.
Yeah. Kind of hard to have a fight with three or four other guys in the van, right?
That's right. Yeah, there was a lot that needed to be said and hashed out, you know, in a healthy environment that we just didn't have the environment for. Yeah.
Practical question for you, Matt. What about the gear? Did you pull something behind you, like a trailer?
Oh, yeah. We did. We had a trailer. We had a van and a trailer. And so, we had space in the van to sleep and whatnot, or to, you know, rest. We actually at one point tried to build our own bunks in the back of the conversion van to give us a little bit of the feeling of privacy, but that was just a facade.
Well, Matt, talk about the song. Where did it come from?
Yeah, so the song Lead Me, wasn't just a song written in a writer's room or, you know, with some guys thinking, hey, what's the next song we're going to write? It was one of those really deeply guttural life experience songs that just kind of pours out of you. And the day that I wrote that song, my wife, Sarah, sat me down in our dining room and we just sat across from each other at the table. And I'll never forget the look on her face because she was so broken by this hunger inside of her, this need inside of her, that she just felt like, I remember her saying the words to me, that you're here, but you're not here. Mm. And she just so desperately wanted to, you know, live out this dream of life together that we had idealized. And of course, young newlyweds, of course you have maybe some unrealistic expectations that you're working out. And there are also some realistic needs as well, some fundamental needs that I needed to hear about in her heart. And so, you know, it's easy to become defensive, especially when you're a cycle of broken conflict and communication, which we were. But that day, God gave me the grace to really hear her heart and hear the words that she was saying to me. And then not just hear them, but receive them into my heart. And when she was done talking to me and sharing the things that she needed to say, I turned and I actually looked at the picture sitting next to me of our wedding day. Mm. And that's when my heart really felt broken because the contrast between the woman I saw in that wedding photo of this glowing countenance of joy and hope for the future, and then compared to this woman who was sitting in front of me only 7 years later, who looked completely broken and crushed in spirit. Mm-hmm. That contrast, man, just hit me so hard. And I just knew that for whatever part of that was my fault as the leader in this relationship, I needed to take responsibility for that. And God really spoke to me that day about my good intentions, you know, and really kind of stirred up in me this reality that I had really been living according to these good intentions and I needed a real change. I picked up my guitar, and that was the day I wrote the first draft of Lead Me.
Wow. How long was this process of your struggling with what you were hearing and what you were feeling before you finally came to the place where you decided to leave the band?
Yeah, well, you know, I write about it in detail in the book, but in short, Lead Me is an irony in my life, because the song that I had written that was a sincere representation of Sarah's heart cry and a sincere representation of me wanting to be a man that would step up to the plate and really be the man that God has called me to be and be the husband that she needs for me and the father for my kids, that's there and present every day. That song about being there for my family, the success of it actually took me away from my family even more. And so there was kind of this long process of me realizing, like, I wrote this song with a sincere heart, but I'm not living up to what I have said I want, the way I want to live, or the way God's calling me to be there for my family as the leader. And I came to a place where I realized, like, am I just going to sing this song, or am I actually going to live it? And through a series of events, God just continued to speak back to me through the words of that song, you know, that so many other people kind of took for themselves. And when you sing it on stage, it's easy to, like, watch everybody else receive that song as if the words are meant for them. But those words were meant for me as well. And as those words spoke back to me over the course of a few years, I knew that this restlessness, this tension I had felt between work dreams and career dreams, and not knowing how to resolve that, I knew that that restlessness in my spirit had turned to a release. So as sure as I was restless, that's how sure I was that I was released. And I really felt like God was speaking to me, telling me that it was time to sing Lead Me Less and Live It More.
Now, how many children did you have by this point?
Yeah, so at that point, we had, at the point I wrote Lead Me, we had had our two girls. We didn't know Sarah was about to be pregnant, you know, with a third. And then, you know, once that song came out, we had our third baby. So I had three at the time when Lead Me really started taking off. And a couple years later, we had a fourth. So it wasn't long before we had four little ones at home, all within 2 years of each other. So it was an extremely crucial time for our family.
Yeah. So do you remember when you finally made that decision to break with the band?
I do. Yeah. I remember I was laying in my bunk at the end of a long weekend on the tour bus, and I could hear everybody out in the front lounge, you know, talking and laughing. And I was just in the quietness of my own space back there, just really heartbroken because I was torn between this dream that, you know, I had lived for almost 20 years at that point, and just knowing that it was time to say goodbye, but wanting to keep one foot in the boat and wanting to kind of dip my other toe in the water. But I really knew that the Lord was calling me to give myself fully to putting, you know, my family first and using my creative gifts in a context that was healthy for our family. And so I just remember the Lord speaking to me that giving me a certainty that he was calling me out. And one of my biggest fears in this whole thing was like, okay, God, I'm, you know, if I leave, what about the other guys? What about all the people that my life will affect? I'm the singer of this band. I'm the songwriter. I've been the face of it. You know, there's so many different areas that I felt I carried this weight of responsibility, and what'll happen to them. And I felt just in the stillness of my spirit, God speak to me and say, do you think you're the only child of mine that I love? And I realized in that moment, like, I'm making this all about me. This is not just about me. God is calling me to this, not just for me, but for the sake of all of us.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it had to be hard. How did you tell the band, and then how did they respond?
Yeah, so I wrote the guys a letter to kind of set the table for the discussion. And, you know, I knew it was going to be a hard conversation, and I wanted to really articulate my heart in it and my love for them more than anything. I wanted to honor those guys for all they had put in and we'd done together. And so I wrote a letter, which I put part of that, you know, in the book. And just that kind of was the segue into the conversation for us. But the conversation was really difficult. Understandably, these guys had devoted 20 years of their lives as well. And so I think they wanted to be supportive, but at the same time, understandably, they were dealing with their own pain. And, you know, they were visibly upset, but that's when I had to, again, put it in God's hands and do my best to be a friend, even through a time when I was the one leaving. It was really hard to know how to navigate, but God gave us grace through it. It was difficult. But the really cool part about that is I've watched as he has healed any of those hurts over time and made our relationship stronger.
Matt Hammett is joining us on Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman. If you go to the website, 5lovelanguages.com, you'll see more about Lead Me, the book about the story that he's telling and the song that you're hearing. I have to ask you, though, Matt, you know, there's probably somebody listening who says, well, that's great for him that God spoke to him. He could leave this. I'm not a singer-songwriter. You know, I work down at the plant. I work at the auto shop or whatever. I can't quit and devote all the time to my family. It's just not possible. You're not saying that every father and husband who's listening ought to quit their job and do full-time home. Explain that to me.
I was gone 250 days out of the year. You know, I had to look at my life personally and say, okay, if I want to be good at my job, I have to show up. I have to show up in the writing room. I have to show up on stage. I have to perform. If I wasn't willing to show up for that job, how could I be excellent at it? And I had to ask myself, if I don't ever show up at home, how can I be an excellent husband and father? You know, there are some hard questions in there for anybody. You're absolutely right. Not everybody can just up and leave their job. Not everybody's called to do that. But I do think that we're all called to ask the hard questions about how have we risen to be the men and the fathers and the husband that God has called us to be on a daily basis, to fight through those hard questions about who we really are versus who we want to be and what steps, big or small, God is calling us to take to answer that call. You know, like I said, sometimes those are big things, big, hard decisions, career decisions. And sometimes those are little things like, how do I schedule time this week to give one-on-one attention to each one of my children? Or how do I prioritize time in my schedule this week to pray with my wife and to read to her and to talk with her about some of the deeper issues that are on her heart?
Gary, what Matt is describing right there is what you see in the counseling office every week. It's what you deal with, have dealt with in your own life too, right?
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. Chris, you may remember, I think I shared this once before, but I don't know, several months ago, I did a funeral, and there was a young man, he was in his 20s, and after we were at the cemetery, and after the service was over, I just engaged him. I didn't know him, but he was the son of the man that died, and just asked him, you know, in conversation about his father, and he said, I never knew my father. I said, really? He said, yeah. I said, he worked 5 days a week, and I had no time with him, and every Saturday he played golf all day. And he said, I never knew my father. And I walked away with tears in my eyes, you know. We want to be good fathers. I mean, most of us, we really want to be good fathers, but we get caught up sometimes in the whole thing of making a living and in a position and all of that, and really miss out on really the most important thing in our lives. I hope the fathers who are listening to us today, and I hope they'll get a copy of this book and read it. I think it'll help them think, you know, about what adjustments they need to make. And you're right, you know, Matt, it's not easy, and it'll be different for each father. But, you know, I think if we ask God to give us direction, you know, we can do both. You know, I speak on a lot of military bases, and I say, guys, you know, you can be a good military man and be a good father and a good husband, you know. And they're, of course, they're, right, you know, forced to be separated a lot. But it's all a matter of where your heart is and where your priority is. And God can help you, I think, in any vocation, decide, you know, what you need to do.
Matt, we were talking before the break about those men who have to be deployed, in a sense, people in the military and others, salespeople who have to go out and they have to travel a lot. That's just part of the job. What do you say to those men?
You know, I still travel every now and again, not as much as I did before, but just as recently as this spring, Kirk Cameron asked me to come out for 30 days on his Living Room Reset tour. We usually did once a weekend or one weekend a month. And so that was a change for us. And leading up to it, I just had to have a conversation with Sarah. What do you need from me when I leave? You know, we're not used to me being gone this much anymore. And so I think it's the willingness to have those conversations. And not every wife is like my wife, Sarah. My wife, Sarah, is very verbal. She doesn't hesitate to tell me the things that she needs. As a husband, we might need to sometimes prod and ask those questions, you know, instead of just floating along, assuming that everything is going to be fine, no matter what the circumstance is. You know, seeing changes, seeing times that are going to be away, times that are going to be full of more stress or busyness, and taking some preventative measures to have those conversations about What is it that you need from me? What can I give to you that's simple? And, you know, for my wife, it was, hey, when you get up in the morning, I want you to check in with me. Don't wake up and do your thing and forget about me until I call you or you check in the afternoon. I'd like you to wake up and think of me, text me or call me, and just check in with me throughout the day. And, you know, I think that's a really simple thing to do that just made her feel loved. So it's, I think it's looking for those kinds of things.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, I wrote a book on the military, the Five Love Languages Military Edition, on how to speak all the love languages when you're deployed, you know. and you can. In today's world, you can, you know. Even physical touch. We've talked about that. It's not literal touch, but it's emotional touch. When you say such things as, if I were home right now, I'd give you a big hug, you know.
That's good.
Matt, let's talk about another topic, another experience in your life. At the time, Lead Me hit number one on the charts. You and Sarah were by your son Bowen's bedside for his first open heart surgery. Tell us about that.
So in March of 2010, Pieces of a Real Heart, the album with Lead Me on it, came out. And it was kind of crazy because it had a patchwork heart on the front of it that was broken. And only 1 month later, we found out that our son, who was still in Sarah's belly, was going to be born with only half of his heart. And so that patchwork heart really kind of took on a whole new meaning for us. So from April to September, while we were waiting for Bowen to be born, we just had to learn how to trust the Lord with the situation. We tried to learn what life was going to look like with a kid with severe heart disease. We found out that we'd have to have a series of open heart surgeries and just prayed that God would help us. And through it, you know, it wasn't easy. And so September 9th came around and Bowen Matthew Hammett was born. And 5 days later, he went in for his first open heart surgery. You know, that night, we actually, he had a cardiac arrest at 2:13 a.m. We didn't think he was going to survive. And by the grace of God and those wonderful nurses and doctors at his bedside, you know, he survived and we were able to keep our son. And that next day, I remember looking at the chart while I'm standing at my son's bedside, who I had almost lost. And Lead Me was number one that week for the very first time. Mm-hmm. And it was the strangest thing because I'm looking at this thing that I've always wanted, right? All the record sales were happening. The song had reached number one on the main Christian chart all around the world. It was number one on Christian radio. And in that moment, all that success I had dreamed of didn't mean as much to me. Hmm. Not that I wasn't grateful. Yeah. Not that it didn't mean anything at all. Of course it did. Yeah. But man, in light of standing at my son's bedside, who I almost lost, I realized in that moment what really mattered.
How did Bowen's illness affect your marriage? And what would you say to other parents who have chronically children with chronically ill problems?
This is another thing I write about at length because I think it's really important for parents of chronically ill children or parents who are facing, you know, medical stress of any sort to really talk about some of the deeper issues that are happening inside their hearts, because Sarah and I didn't know how to recognize those things as they were happening. Of course, we were brand new parents of a chronically ill child. We hadn't dealt with this before. There were things we didn't know to look out for. And so what happened to us was that we began to grieve differently and we began to grieve separately. So I'm a creative relational processor in my grief. I needed to write. I needed to get away, you know, like for an hour or so a day to write my thoughts, right? To journal, to read. I desired for Sarah to step away from the bedside and be with me and process verbally, relationally, what we were going through together. And her grief, she kind of went full forward to the battlefront, right on the front line in Bowen's health, and would not leave his bedside. And she was solely focused on, how do I help my boy survive? which was also important to me, but she saw, well, how can you step away? How can you want me to step away? Even if it's for just a short period of time. And yeah. I'm thinking, well, how can't you step away? I need my wife. I need our relationship. I need to process in this way. And so instead of grieving together and coming together, our differences began to pull us apart and actually drive a wedge of contempt between us, leading to a very difficult season for us, which by the grace of God, we were able with some good counseling and God's help just to get through. But that was a hard season for us.
Yeah, has to be. You know, that's a very, very common phenomena that, because men and women often grieve differently. And we don't understand the other person and the other person's actions, you know, or their words at times like that. So, yeah. So tell us how things went with Bowen.
Yeah, so Bowen is 9 years old. He just turned 9 last September, and he had his third major open heart surgery last July. And, you know, and it honestly could not have gone better. You know, leading up to it, we were so, obviously had so many feelings. When he was a baby and had his two open heart surgeries, we loved him, but we didn't know his personality yet. He wasn't this massive part of our family, right? This little boy who brings so much joy to his siblings and to us and in our neighborhood and community. And so there was kind of, it felt like a heavier weight this time going into it, but the Lord was good to us. And I mean, I believe he's good whether he gives or takes, don't get me wrong, but we're grateful. Yeah. For that, that surgery was in and out as quickly as he possibly could have recovered. And now he's really thriving. And so it's been a season of blessing for us. We're just grateful for every day that we see him thriving right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what the crazy thing is, Gary, too, I will say and I have to say this, Bowen actually has his own album on Spotify, which is funny. I mean, he loves music. And so if people want to hear a little boy who's been through so much and pours his heart and joy and his love for God out in song, they can actually go to Spotify or wherever they stream music. It's everywhere. Bowen Hammett is just what it's under, but I would encourage people to check it out because it's so sweet. And he's surprisingly talented for his age.
Oh, that's exciting. Matt, you've shared your story with us and how you left the band in order to be a father and to be a husband. What does life look like now? You know, giving up life on the road doesn't fix everything, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What are the kind of things you're facing?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, good or hard decisions don't change things for good. You know, we still fight these same cycles in our conflict and communication. It's funny, just this past week, we went down to be on a radio show with some friends of ours for Marriage and Family. And on the way, like, man, we just like had one of those arguments and we're just like, are we so stupid? You know, like we know that this is a sensitive time. And so like, even in the, what seemed to be these moments, we're supposed to be sharing how great things are. We all know in ministry that the truth is that it's a daily battle to work through those cycles of conflict and struggle. And so, you know, I think that being off the road obviously doesn't fix it, but it does take away one of the major obstacles that was in the way of us having that time and space to work those things out.
Yeah. It's good that we don't have to be perfect to have good marriages and be good parents, right?
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, we try to model that for our kids too. You know, we talk very openly about our conflict with our kids. I mean, obviously not the details of all of it, but we do, you know, we talk about like, hey, you know, people fight and mommies and daddies fight. And we try to be really transparent because we never want our kids to feel like because you have conflict that you have to end a marriage.
Yeah, it's a part of life. I mean, no two people are going to think the same way about everything.
Yeah.
Have you seen families or men that have shared with you how they've been inspired by reading your story?
A lot of the people are kind of saying the same thing about the book that they said about the song, that articulates a feeling, you know, particularly in men, about marriage and relationships that maybe they didn't know how to put in the words themselves, but they feel that and hear that when they either read the book or hear the song. And so I think some of the practical lessons in the book, though, too, are, you know, stirring up men's hearts. One of those we already mentioned about, you know, good intentions versus actions. And I talk a lot about good intentions being worthless, you know, until they become actions based on the reality of not what we think the people we love need, but based on the reality of what others around us who need to be loved by us, which, I mean, falls right into what you do, Gary, you know, learning somebody else's love language, not just trying to love people with our own. You know, I think there's a lot of that sprinkled throughout that I get a lot of feedback on. And also, you know, one area that I've gotten a lot of feedback on is simply taking responsibility and being proactive as gardeners, as men, and cultivating the beauty in our relationships. You know, in the face of neglect, what's beautiful dies and what's ugly thrives. Just like our real garden, you have to cultivate the flowers and you have to pull the weeds, right? It's like, I wish it was the other way around, don't we all? You know, so I think some of these practical lessons I'm getting a lot of good feedback on, mixed with the story, I hope continues to just tug at guys' hearts to just face some of the harder questions, but also be really encouraged through it.
Yeah. I think that whole emphasis you have on good intentions, you know, as opposed to taking action, so important, because most men do have good intentions. You know, they really do want to be good husbands and leaders of the children and the family. But we can have good intentions. That doesn't get the job done, right?
When I speak, there's an illustration I use that seems really like impactful, especially with guys. You know, I take one of those workout dice and I'm like, hey, I bought this at Target. I really did. I bought it at Target and it rolled out of the bag in my back seat. And, you know, it's one of those things you throw on the ground and it tells you like what workout to do, or, you know, 20 push-ups, 30 sit-ups. It just stayed in the back of my car for like 6 months. And I wanted this thing to, like, you know, revolutionize my fitness life. And it just sat in the back of my car. But every time I looked at it, I saw 30 sit-ups. And in my head, I was doing 30 sit-ups. And in my mind, every day, I was imagining myself doing the thing that I wanted to do. And so then I brought it in the house. I'm like, I really need to use this. It sat for another 6 months in our mudroom. But it was push-ups. And in my head, every day, I was doing my push-ups. In my mind, imagining myself getting ripped on my good intentions. But nothing was actually happening where anyone around me would see the difference, because it wasn't real. And I think we all have an imagined life of who we want to be. Yeah. I see myself praying with my kids, spending more quality time with them, being a better husband, doing the things I imagine would make me that. Sometimes we make our imagined life our reality. And I think coming to grips with that imagined life and asking the hard questions about whether, how much of it's really real, man, yeah, that's the piece I think that really is pushing towards change. That's where God can change us, right? And we let go of that pride of who we want to be and see who we really are.
Well, I think not only your life, but I think the book that you've written is going to help a lot of men take action. At least that's my prayer, and I know that's your prayer.
One of the other things that's really weaves its way through your book, Bat, is the idea of suffering and pain and God allowing this and working in us. There was a story a few weeks ago about a singer from a Christian rock band who announced, "I don't believe in God anymore." And you reached out to him on social media, you know, just trying to be a voice of hope and comfort to him, I think. But there are a lot of people who, you know, walk in the front of the church and walk out the back of the church because they can't reconcile suffering and pain and a good God. What do you say about that?
Yeah. You know, I've written some songs with Hawk Nelson, with Jonathan, and I actually spoke with him today, funny enough. To be honest, it really breaks my heart because I see this as a pattern, just like you do. I also, when I read his thought process about where he was in his life and the questions he was asking, I also have empathy because I understand those questions. And it makes me realize that, okay, you know, this was something that, or is something a lot of people like John are feeling and have legitimate questions that have answers. And the answers are there. And they're not always easy and they're laced with mystery. But I do think, in my opinion, we have to do a better job as the church and as followers of Christ on approaching and engaging the issue of doubt.
Yeah.
You know, he was approaching the issue of doubt with people around him, finding in his doubt that so many others were doubting as well, even people who he thought wouldn't be doubting. The truth is, we all have doubts. Faith, right, is believing in what you can't see. And so that's a hard journey. It really is. And so yeah. I just think that maybe we need to be engaging some of these conversations on a regular basis with the people that we love so that we can work through them in a context of hopefully moving closer to Christ, not further away from him.
Yeah. Well, I certainly agree with that. You know, Jesus once turned to some of his followers and said, as the multitudes left him, and he said, would you guys also want to leave? And they said, where would we go? You have the words of eternal life. Yeah, I think that's a question that still can be heard today. If we leave Christ, where are we going? And there's no good answer.
Yeah. I will say, you know, John's new endeavor is a creative life worth living. And I love him as a friend dearly, but I can't help but think, what's worth living as a creator when you don't know your own creator?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I think, yeah, you're right. We need to be empathetic with people who are struggling because, as you say, doubt is a part of life. And be with them. You know, we can be friends to people even who disagree with us.
You know? Yes, that's a good word.
Because the arms of Christ are always open. You know, we can walk away and we can walk back. The prodigal son came home. Well, Matt, this has been a great discussion. I appreciate you being with us today and for taking time and energy to put all of this in a book that I think God is going to use to encourage and help a lot of guys. So thanks again for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Chapman. I appreciate you having me on.
We hope this honest conversation has encouraged you as a dad, has given a good perspective of some of the struggles going on in a lot of people's lives. Dr. Dennis Rainey describes our featured resource as an epic book that every man, married or single, should read. The title again, Lead Me, Finding Courage to Fight for Your Marriage, Children, and Faith. You can find out more at 5lovelanguages.com.
And next week, a creative, fun idea to help you forge lasting family connections.
How do you strengthen your marriage when you're stuck at home? We'll find out in 1 week. A big thank you today to our production team, Steve Wick and Janice Todd. Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman is a production of Moody Radio in Chicago in association with Moody Publishers, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute. Thanks for listening and happy Father's Day.